from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Welcome back. Welcome. Hell, where have I been? Oh, wait, I've been on the road. I'm Duran Martinez, your host, all over the Michigan Talk Network, all over the Great Lakes State as well. Back from SHOT Show in Las Vegas. 60,000 spectators at one of the world's largest manufacturers' gun shows. Not one incident, okay? There. That's how gun shows go. No incidents. You've got 60,000 spectators coming through, manufacturers literally from all over the world for the shooting, hunting, and outdoor trade exposition. And it's just absolutely incredible to see this show. It's two huge floors of more guns and ammunition and manufacturers than you can ever imagine. And it was a good time. We'll have lots of info coming on that in the weeks ahead. We've got a lot of people that we talked to at the show, and we'll be catching up with them and doing so. So appreciate you joining us. Thanks again to Lucky Buck Deer Mineral for joining us. Also, our friends at Costa Sunglasses and Darton Archery helping bring Wild Michigan to the air, and our friends at MUCC keeping an eye on what's going on around the state. Some things popping up. Drew Youngdyke from MUCC joins me right now. Drew, how are you, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. I'm doing great. You know, I didn't make it out to the SHOT Show, but we did run into each other down at the Archery Trade Association show, in which there were also no incidents despite arrows being flung all around the inside of the facility there too.
No, it was, man. It was a great time, and it's always great catching up with the people that, even though you know them, just to be social, which, right, you know, it's very important that we all do that. Look, man, And when you bring up ATA, what's cool is about the outdoors industry is what people don't realize from the inside of the archery trade or even the outdoors as a business, it's extremely small. It's like
it is really small. And it's extremely Michigan-centric, too. I don't think people realize that, especially with the archer. You mentioned Darton. They have new bows, but there's so many Michigan companies that are really at the forefront of the hunting and fishing industry. It's neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, Darton's been around for, 65 years now, and of course, Quickie Quiver's been around for years and years. You've got Marbles Knives, you've got White River, you know, some people we ran into at SHOT Show. There's a lot of very small Michigan companies. Boning Archery, another one that's been around for numerous years, located right there in Lake City, and this is where they all come together in these two shows. And become a part of what would seemingly be a big industry, but it's actually kind of small. And it's funny when you can walk past like country music superstar Craig Morgan. He's by himself, nobody bothering him. It's actually quite funny.
That's great.
But let's talk about a couple things that are going on right now. There is a push right now to have, and I know this is going to sound really silly to some, and there's some people that are going to be offended by this, but to remove chocolate from bear baiting in Michigan. Now, look, you know you're not going to feed chocolate to your dog. We know that it can be toxic in large quantities, and removing that from bear bait is a good idea because there are other animals around that are also could suffer from the effects of chocolate.
Right, and actually, the active ingredient in chocolate that causes that negative impact to dogs is called threonylbromide, and it actually has the same effect in bears. And I think what's really remarkable about this effort to ban chocolate in baits for bears is it's actually coming from the bear hunting organizations themselves. So this isn't like some anti-hunters saying we want to restrict what you do. This is the bear hunters of Michigan that have organized into groups like the Michigan Bear Hunters Association, UP Bear Houndsmen, and the Michigan Hunting Dog Federation, among some others, that are saying we recognize that this could have some negative impacts to bears. There were 4 bears that died from eating a lot of chocolate in a bait pile in New Hampshire and seeing that they're being proactive and saying, you know, we don't want to harm non-target wildlife. We want to be selective. And so the bear hunters themselves are going to the DNR and say, we'd like you to consider banning chocolate or solid chocolates and bait with the 2017 regulation cycle.
You know, there's a million other things. Speaking with Drew Youngdyke here on Wild Michigan, there's a million other things you can use. I mean, there are like liquid smoke products they can mix with water. A lot of people use jelly donuts and sweet molasses and things of that nature. Chocolate, I don't think, is going to be a big deal to omit from your baiting practices, especially when it's going to help, help by staying out of that mix.
Right, and you know, bears like sweet things. As my colleague Amy Trotter likes to say, think about Winnie the Pooh. He likes honey. They like sweet things. But you know, we'll have to work out the regulations of how you make sure that you're not inadvertently, you know, penalizing somebody who maybe got a little bit of like chocolate chips and a trail mix or something like that that they're using. So you know, those regulations will have to be worked out. But I think it's pretty neat. Pretty remarkable that it's the bear hunters themselves saying, hey, we care about the wildlife. It's our responsibility to look out for the wildlife, and we want to make sure that our practices aren't harming them.
You know, what amazes me, too, is when we think of it first, it's one, more impressive, but two, it really shows, well, I don't know, I guess putting it past the anti-hunting community that we care that much about a species that we target. They're never going to see things the same way we do, but I think it speaks volumes to those in the hunting community and to those that are just curious about it, that we are taking that proactive approach to taking chocolate out of it.
Right, and I always say it's the 20-10-70 rule. You know, we might have 20% of the people who hunt and fish, 10% that really don't like it and are opposed to it, and then there's that 70-80% in the middle. And that's who we need to reach. So I think something like this, an effort like this coming from the hunting community, from the bear hunting community themselves, asking for this type of regulation, yeah, you're never going to convince those 10% of people that are opposed to hunting. But I think that speaks volumes to those 70% of kind of non-hunters in the middle that maybe aren't that invested with it, but will support our right to hunt as long as they know that we're being respectful of the wildlife and we're looking out for them.
Absolutely. Drew Youngdyke, MUCC, is joining us here. A link to the MUCC is on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcast and check out all kinds of other great stuff that we've got on there as well. But Drew is a regular feature here as we appreciate the work that the MUCC is doing. And Drew, real quickly, some of the negative effects that's having, aside from, you know, all from the few bears that were that died as a result of I don't know, do we laugh when say of overindulgence in chocolate? I mean, but
yeah, I think one of the news services called it death by chocolate, but it's just, you know, it's only toxic, you know, at high concentrations at certain levels, so that's why you need to make sure that the regulations are kind of tailored to that. But yeah, it can impact, you know, dogs. Think about like whether a hunting dog might circle back around to the bait or something like that. You know, it can impact raccoons. It can impact bears. I think there was a bear that died from it in Michigan back in like 2010, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it was really these four that died next to a bait pile in New Hampshire that kind of spurred this renewed discussion. The bear hunting community has been encouraging the voluntary, you know, refrain from using chocolate for a little while now, and I think they're recognizing the importance now of being proactive of getting that in the regulation.
Yeah, I don't see where it's going to be too much of a fight, I hope. You know, and again, it's proven fact that no matter what you are, who you are, resistance to chocolate's pretty much futile. but again, we are taking a proactive approach to really care for the animals we hunt, so we have them there for future generations, and we understand that. That's not a big deal at all. Speaking with Drew Youngdyke from MUCC here on Wild Michigan, wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. You can use it year-round, but make sure you know the regulations. Go to lucky-buck.com. to figure out where and when you can use it, especially here in the Great Lakes state of Michigan. We'll keep you all informed the best we can here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, I'm Lee Lukowski.
And I'm Tiffany Lukowski from the Crush TV.
And you're listening to Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez. Our website is wildmichiganradio.com. Thank you, Lee and Tiffany. Great seeing them at both ATA and SHOT Show. Very good friends. Love them to death. And they even did a special shout-out video to my now fiance Sarah Marie, because she couldn't make ATA. And it was very nice of them to offer up a video to congratulate us on our the impending nuptials, you might say. But it's all good, man. When you find somebody that hunts and fishes with you and does everything you like to do, it's all right until they get into your favorite tree stand and it all goes bad. But that's okay. That's what life's about. Drew Youngdike, MUCC, is joining us right now here on Wild Michigan. Website is wildmichiganradio.com, and you can find a link to the MUCC there. Drew, let's talk a little bit about aquaculture, whatever. However I want to say it today, because I'm having tongue difficulties. Aquaculture in the Great Lakes, we're finding new studies show that it's not very popular. We don't want fish farming in the Great Lakes, because even though they may be even a native species, a lot of things could go wrong.
Right, and I think there's kind of an innate realization, and this is the case, that there's a big difference between domestically grown farmed fish and wild fish. So how, you know, their genetic fitness basically survive in the wild. What we don't want is that kind of interbreeding, when you have farm fish escaping, interbreeding with wild fish, making them less fit to be able to survive. Fish farms, when you put open net pens in the Great Lakes, you have a huge accumulation of effluent, or for lack of a better word, fish poop, dropping in one spot that there's no way, no technologically feasible way to get rid of that. So you can create, you know, localized algae blooms, that kind of thing. You know, those domestic fish can spread disease to wild fish. And basically, we don't want to risk that $7 billion Great Lakes sport fishery, basically for a very short-term, risky, small gain. So that we just had all the fishing groups in Michigan, all the conservation groups have been vocal in our opposition to Great Lakes fish farms. Epic MRA recently did a poll that showed 68% of Michiganders oppose fish farms in the Great Lakes, and only a fraction of that, I think it's 17% here, actually support it, with like a 12% undecided. So it's pretty overwhelming, the opposition to fish farming in the Great Lakes. This is across all party lines, all regions of the state, all demographic lines. Everybody just kind of innately realizes this is a bad idea.
You know, and you make a very valid point, something that should be very obvious to people. I mean, it was obvious to me. When you contain anything, look, we can't go in with a tractor, scoop all this stuff up, and make it, you know, and reuse it for fertilizer. It's not like that in aquaculture and in water in general. So the containment issue and having, you know, that affect our free range fish, which is already in salmon populations, we're seeing a decline because of food sources. Man, ask anybody that fished the Great Lakes last year for salmon, that fished Lake Michigan in particular. It was a tough go, and I don't think we need any more trouble.
And I think that's really it. You know, with the trouble that the fish are having already, do you really want to introduce another risk that doesn't presently exist there? You know, if you care about fishing in the Great Lakes, you know that, you know, we're doing everything we can to try to keep it going. So why would you add another risk that could sink all of that, that you don't need, that you don't currently have? Currently, fish farms present no risk in the Great Lakes because they don't exist. So why would we introduce that potential negative harm to our Great Lakes fisheries? But because of that, we're actually supporting legislation that's just been introduced by Representative John Bumstead out of Nuevo. And that's House Bill 5255, and that would proactively ban commercial fish farms in the Great Lakes. We're not talking about aquaculture overall, because there's closed systems that present no risk, mm-hmm. you know, that are land-based. But we're talking about net pens in the Great Lakes. House Bill 5255 coming out of John Bumstead and Wago would proactively say, not on my watch, not in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, definitely. That could be an issue. It's something we don't want to see. And look, I know we have and probably better monitored interior aquaculture at fish farms than we did probably in the 70s. And maybe the locations are a bit more are a bit better, because look what happened when we had a bit of a flood in some of the Southwest regions that were using, you know, big head carp and the like to clean their fish farms. You get a bit of a flood, they get into the water system, boom, you got a huge issue now. You know, so it's the Asian carp issue is something that it should be a reminder in general, but this in such a vast body of water like the Great Lakes, it could be, and I'm not trying to be a doomsayer, but it could be really, really bad.
Right, and it's just it's a matter of it's a really poor bet. It's a really poor risk. There was a scientific panel that was kind of pulled together to look at what are the both economic and scientific potential impacts. They basically said there is no technologically feasible way to get rid of that effluent that comes out. There's simply no way to get rid of it in the Great Lakes. Yeah. They estimated that, you know, there's two proposed fish farms that might generate like $1 million. Well, you're going to generate $1 million possibly, but you're going to do that by jeopardizing $7 billion. And that's just a terrible bet.
Yeah, I agree completely. Now, let's go to everybody's favorite subject. Speak with Drew Youngdyke from MUCC here on Wild Michigan, our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Drew, let's talk wolves. It's been kind of quiet lately, but I'm starting to see a few things in the news now popping up about the delisting and people getting together once again trying to remove them from a protected species.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's getting a little loud again, and that's good news. So just to remind everybody, you know, we have in Michigan the Scientific Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act. We all worked hard to get that passed. That means that our Natural Resources Commission has the ability to name game species. Wolves, of course, were put back on the endangered species list by a single federal judge's ruling, not this past December, but the December before. We've been working to get them back off the list. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologists, pretty much every biologist in the country, that's worth with their salt, says, yeah, they need to come off the list. So we're appealing that federal court ruling, but in the meantime, we're trying to do it legislatively as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Bipartisan Sportsmen's Act that was just amended in a Senate committee to include that delisting of wolves in Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. This Bipartisan Sportsmen's Act, it's come up a few years before in a few previous sessions. It's always been blocked in the Senate. That block in the Senate is now gone. We believe that it now has a good chance to move. So we're encouraging everybody now to call your senators here in Michigan and encourage them to pass the Bipartisan Sportsmen's Act. That's Debbie Stabenow and Senator Gary Peters. I even have their numbers if you want me to give them out right now.
I think that would be awesome.
All right. So Senator Debbie Stabenow, her D.C. office phone number is 202-224-4822, and you press 1 to leave a comment, and your comment can be as simple as, Senator Stabenow, I live in Michigan, and I would like you to pass the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act. Senator Gary Peters, the number is 202-224-6221. You also press 1 to leave a comment and leave the same thing. It's really simple. Please pass the Bipartisan Sportsman's Act, and I live in Michigan.
All right, Drew Youngdyke, MUCC, appreciate your time. Got a lot more talk coming your way. WildMichiganRadio.com. Check them out. You can find the link to MUCC right there. We're being brought to you by Darton Archery. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Drew Youngdyke from the MUCC for joining us yet again here on the show. Always good to keep up with what's going on around the state and around the country. As far as things that may affect hunters of all types and anglers as well, in the Great Lakes State and around. A couple of things going on. We're going to get to the Ingham County Chapter 467 banquet talk here in a little bit. This is banquet season and show season here in Michigan. Our good friend Travis T-Bone Turner, who I ran into him and Nick Munt at SHOT Show. Last week I was there? I don't even know anymore. I've been on the road so much. But ran into T-Bone, and he's going to be here in Michigan at the Whitetails Unlimited Deer Camp coming up on the 27th of February. We will be there. We'll have a table there. We'll be looking forward to seeing you as well. All that information is on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, as are links to our friends at the Ingham County Chapter of Pheasants Forever 467. Board member joining us right now, Kent Ballard. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Duran. Real good. How are you doing?
Thank goodness for cell phones, huh?
That's right.
Poor Kent's at work today, and all of a sudden they cut his lines at work. So it's awful quiet where he's at, but you know what? That means we have his full attention.
You got it.
We appreciate that, man. We're going to talk about the Ingham County Chapter of Pheasants Forever here in a little bit, because they kind of go hand in hand with something else that you're very passionate about, and that's deer hunting and the East Olive branch of the Quality Deer Management group. And this hits me kind of close because I hunt the same area you hunt, and we have now been in that area of Clinton County where they have found the fifth deer with CWD, and man, that's gonna make things a little difficult and interesting. And I want to get your take on that from your organization, your group, how it's, you know, the initial hit is being viewed right now.
Yeah, so one of the things that I look at, Duran, I don't think anyone knows exactly how this is going to sort out. We just had our local co-op meeting. Neighbor and friend Kirk Narker has done a wonderful job in putting our local QDMA group together, the East Olive Co-op. It's been in existence now for 9 years, and one of our other neighbors, Jimmy Voisinette, is kind enough to host a couple of get-togethers each year, one prior to season and one after. And the folks from the DNR came this last weekend and spoke to us. Our township actually touches by corner the two townships where these last two deer were found. And so, of course, deer hunting, I often kid and say, I don't bowl, I don't golf, I don't NASCAR, I bow hunt. Mm-hmm. And so this is super near and dear to myself and everyone that was at that meeting. And basically, the way I gather it, the DNR is trying to get as large a sample size as they can to figure out if this is prevalent or at what rate it exists and what can they do to knock it out or combat it. And, I support the DNR, our local co-op does, in a meaningful way, however we can help out. And try to get them as many statistics as they can. I think the biggest thing as hunters we can do is when we shoot our deer, be certain to get them into a DNR check station. It's painless. They'll give you your patch as a successful hunter, and they can then test that deer locally and out in Iowa. If it does have a positive test, they confirm it with an outside lab also. So it's serious. It's going to be interesting to see how the landscape changes over the next 3 to 5 years.
Speaking with Kent Ballard here on Wild Michigan. Kent, I'm going to take a kind of personal and yet selfish approach, and this is just me talking. I had the conversation with my dad the other day about, hey, they offered me 5 tags for deer for this time of year. And as much as I'm behind the DNR and what they're doing and everything else, there's a selfish part of me that says, you know what? I really don't want to fill those tags. I know we need the information and we need to do it. But again, we work very hard for management, and to take a buck in its first year or, whatever the case, I'm struggling right now with this thing. And again, this is me, only me talking. And again, me being completely selfish, I'll admit that. But I know we need the body count for the research.
Well, and Duran, I'll share my personal approach. Again, I want to support the DNR so they can do their work. There's a phone number where you can call in any roadkill deer, which I absolutely will do. And my deer that I shot this year on my place, I, of course, like I always do, but I thought it had even more priority this year with the CWD. I take them over to Rose Lake to have them, do their test, give them the brain and skull, the test. Mm-hmm. And so I'll continue to do that. I have no interest personally until the disease comes directly into my area, I don't have any interest in shooting deer out of season, or what I would call the non-traditional seasons, or especially right now, you know, these bucks are dropping their antlers or have dropped them. I don't have any interest. To me, that's bordering on animal cruelty, and I know I'm kind of sounding corny there, but I don't want to kill a four-year-old buck in the winter with no antlers on it.
Yeah, again,
that's me.
Well, you know, and I'm on the same page, and you know, we have a tough time because our property is within yards of Sleepy Hollow State Park. You know, where we hunt. So, and I do not, I'm not condemning anybody for how they hunt, as long as it's ethical and legal, and management is on me in our area. But it gets tough sometimes, and I know you know that, being a part of that organization, which is basically a stone's throw from where I hunt. So,
sure, right. No, and it is tough to, you know, to see other hunters shooting smaller bucks, but if it's legal, it's ethical, and they're proud of it, right? It's something
exactly.
that they haven't accomplished before. More power to them. You know, all I know is it's not like fishing. When I send an arrow through them myself, I can't, you know, catch them and then release them.
Yeah.
So it's tough a lot of the time. It's a curve that you've got to get through. But once you let them walk and you start to see some positives later on, as far as age in your deer herd, or you see the same deer a year later,
right.
Or 2 years later, right? That's when I think it starts to get easier and easier. And it is an evolution process. It really is.
Yeah, it's been that way for me too, you know, and I get it. Look, I was when I first started bow hunting, I know I took a very young buck, but I have learned, I've been taught, and you know, now hopefully we can educate people the same way. And in the next segment, when we talk to you, we're going to get to what you're doing with Pheasants Forever 467, but because of your deer cooperative where you're at and the habitat program, you guys are actually doing things pretty hand-in-hand right now, and they benefit both.
No, I agree. We have a good relationship, QDMA and Pheasants Forever does. You know, if you think about it, we're trying to accomplish a lot of the same things with different species.
No, and that's a great thing, absolutely. But you guys have a big banquet coming up. That's coming up in March, and we will talk about that. But right now, how are the gun raffles going? Because you're doing a huge amount of guns that you're giving away.
We are, yeah. We have the raffle that we have going right now, Duran. We have 53 guns, and then there's seven other items that aren't guns. There's a couple of steel chainsaws, a Nikon scope, a crossbow. But that raffle, you have better than 1 in 32 odds of winning, and there's less than 160 or 155 tickets remaining on that raffle. They're only $20 each. You don't have to be present to win, and the drawing is March 11th at our annual fundraiser, which is absolutely the largest outdoor fundraiser in the greater Lansing area.
Absolutely.
You've been to it. You know, over the years, your attendance. It's unlike anything in the area, for sure.
And we will be there, but we're going to talk more with Kent Ballard here, board member of Pheasants Forever, Chapter 467, also a member of the East Olive Quality Deer Management Cooperative. Good stuff, man. Keep it here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time, in a state 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. Duran Martinez here on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. It's where you can find all our great sponsors and our great friends that we talk to a lot here on the show. It's wildmichiganradio.com. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/wildmichigan, and on Twitter as well. And if you're looking for some new apparel, our friends at The Job Shop, Inc., our good friend Scott McCullough and the gang over there have got some new New shirts. Or actually, our Sons of Archery shirts. We're going to get rid of what's left there. And if you want to pick them up, they're $12 a piece or two for $20. 100% American made. Okay. Made in the USA. And thanks to JSI Apparel. So that link again on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Speaking again with Kent Ballard from the Pheasants Forever Chapter 467, the Ingham County Chapter. They're about to have their 23rd annual fundraising banquet, and it's going to be at the Eagle Eye once again. Kent, this is by far the freak nastiest, biggest banquet ever.
It is, Duran. It promises to be big and bad as ever. We'll give away over 200 guns that night. You know, we give away a couple of boats, a real nice Polaris ATV. It's quite an event. There's a way for you to spend money and try to win something and support the cause of our nonprofit in a big way that night, as you know.
I do know, and what's really cool about this, I mean, look, the camaraderie is great, the venue is great, the food is great, but when you can walk in, see, I don't know, what do you got? You guys got about 100 guns there on the table, minimum?
Well, you know, we'll give away that night over 200, Duran.
Yeah. So, you know, and never an incident, for those of you that like to pick at gun owners, never an incident at these events. And it's going to Habitat and to getting, you know, because look, Michigan has been in a restoration process of our pheasant and of our habitat. Look, you can't have pheasants everywhere without habitat. Okay, we've seen that happen over the years. You've got downtown Detroit where buildings are abandoned and you've got stuff growing up, and my God, the pheasant population doing quite well over there.
That's amazing. Habitat truly is missing link. You can have, you know, predators, you can try to eliminate your predators, you can try to get more food for birds. The key really is the nesting cover and protection from the weather and those predators. That's the key.
It is the key. And look, when you have that cover, when you have that, especially the nesting cover that they need so bad, and predator control is going to be a big issue. I mean, there's a lot more people out there hunting coyotes nowadays, but it's not just coyotes. You've got things like raccoons that come and smash the eggs of ground nesting birds for food and mm-hmm. the like. You know, look, we know everything's got to live, but there has to be a balance, and that's really what is happening right now with our pheasants here in Michigan. And our own DNR, who we talked about in the previous segment, they have a restoration program going.
Yes, it's a wonderful partnership. The restoration program really, you know, is a joint effort by several outdoor groups. And again, my involvement with the local Quality Deer Management Co-op and County Chapter, and then my involvement with the Ingham County Chapter of Pheasants Forever goes hand in hand. We have a gal, her name is Anna Mitterling, who works at MUCC that the DNR helps us to fund along with the two outdoor nonprofits. Her position of co-op coordinator, whether that be a co-op for QDMA or one of the pheasant co-ops that go with the pheasant restoration project.
Now, you guys are more than just banquets and giveaways and the like. I mean, that's all well and good, but this money goes to a lot of programs. And one program that you guys are very, guys and gals, I use guys as a generic term, and my apologies, but it's getting the youth involved. We are losing hunters and anglers at a rapid rate, and it is up to us to educate them about about hunting and fishing and getting them outdoors and getting them away from the confines of the house.
Correct. Yeah, it's when we were younger, Duran, it was much easier to step outside and not be distracted. You know, you went outside to do things. Today, there's so many things monopolizing their time inside, whether it be, you know, the television, their games that they're playing with an Xbox or whatever it might be. But we put over 200 children through Hunter's Ed at no cost to the children. We feed them. We put them through a field day. We also do a couple of youth hunts with Jim Graham out in St. John's. He's very kind to host the hunts. We generally put about 55 kids in the spring and again in the fall. through those youth hunts. We do a woman's hunt, that again, out in St. John's at Woodland Acres, which has been a big hit. And then as far as the different groups that we try to support also, we do a active military and returning military hunt each year, right here locally, or we've done them also up at my Grant Ranch up in Sheboygan. Mm-hmm. And that is an awesome, awesome give back that we do with the military too.
No, it is, and I've been at those shoots before, and it is so nice to see the smiles on these guys' faces, because it really takes them, it takes them away from every day. You know, it gets them outdoors, and it's a lot of fun to see these guys smiling and to know that they've been through a lot tougher things than I'll ever imagine being through. But to get them out and, you know, enjoy some time in the field. Now, if you want to find out more about this chapter, it's pf467.org. There's a link on our website at wildmichiganradio.com. March 11th is this banquet, Kent, and it's... Again, I can't really describe it other than really big, a lot of people, lots of stuff. And this is your 20, this blows my mind, this is your 23rd year.
It is, Duran, 23rd year. We have, I think, also about 80 dinner tickets still remaining. And right on the website, anyone can jump on there to pick those dinner tickets up. Also, the raffle that I referenced, the 53 guns, 60 prizes total. Those tickets are available there. And we have our Gun a Week raffle that we've just started selling tickets for. That first drawing, I believe, is the first part of August. The current raffle is going on as we speak. Those tickets are all sold out. But, you know, there's that, the website is very easy to maneuver around. Folks can find out a little bit more about the banquet. And it really is a unique experience, that banquet that night. And as you've been, I know it's been a dozen years that you've attended, you've seen how it continues to get bigger and bigger. And the folks that come, you don't need to be right here in Ingham County.
Right.
They come from connecting states all around also.
Absolutely. Now, what I like about, you know, when you mentioned the Gun a Week raffle, for people that don't know, this is it's a $52 ticket, which essentially breaks down to $1 a week for this thing.
Yeah.
And there's a gun every week, and it goes on the Michigan Daily 3 numbers for Wednesday night.
That's right. Our good friends at Gander Moulton supply the guns for us. Winners can pick their gun up at any Gander Moulton store or their local FFL dealer. It's again, you can be from outside the area. Fabulous guns. And my friend, our chapter president, Jeff J.D. Davis, spearheads that raffle. Folks can call him directly, or they can jump online and pick up those tickets. And again, you have 52 chances. If your number is drawn in the daily Wednesday evening three-digit lottery, you're good for 52 weeks, because you're drawn once. That doesn't mean you can't win 3 weeks later.
Exactly, right? And that's the nice thing about that. And, you know, I was giving JD some grief about winning, but the man buys like 10 tickets, so it's okay.
He does. He really does. Yes. Yes.
But yeah, it's going to be a good time. March 11th. It's going to happen at Eagle Eye. Again, you can, and that is a great facility in itself. Go to pf467.org. Or get a direct link from our website, which is wildmichiganradio.com. That's where you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and everything else, every other form of social media. I think with the except of Pinterest, we have taken care of. Haven't got to the Pinterest yet. I don't think we're really going to be on that. But Kent Ballard, we appreciate your insight. Best of luck with the East Olive branch of the Quality Deer Management that you guys are doing. And thank you so much for all your help with the Pheasants Forever Chapter 467, the Ingham County guys and gals.
Duran, great to catch up. Thank you again for your support. And I know we'll cross paths prior, but I'll see you on the 11th and hopefully call your number to win a couple of ducks.
Sounds good to me, man. Thanks so much. Thanks so much to our friends at Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Also, Darton Archery, Costa Sunglasses. See what's out there. Whole another hour coming your way next. Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.